Welcome to the Rent to Retirement Podcast, your resource for passive real estate investing and retirement strategies. If you're new to real estate or planning your financial future, you're in the right place. Join us at renttoretirement.com to find your path to financial freedom and an easy, carefree retirement. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Rent to Retires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode. And once again, I'm here with Zach Lemaster, the CEO of Rent to Retirement. And we have a whole team here with us today. Well, maybe not his whole team. He's got a pretty big team, but the big wigs over at Highlands. We have Graham, Aaron, and Andrew. It's great to have you gentlemen here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So we've been seeing, you know, obviously rates are, you know, people have been seeing them fly all over the place. You know, for a while we got way up into the mid to high sevens. You know, we're back down, you know, significantly lower than that. Tell us just in general, I mean, people hear about inflation, have seen the inflation numbers. Is that what's driving this, you know, volatile market, or what's really causing the moves?
Andrew, I'm gonna let you take this one.
Sure. Coming out of 2021, you know, we had the historic low rates. All that was really predicated by the government pushing money into our system. And so this year is the antithesis of that experience. And the term that would describe it is called qualitative tightening. So you hear QE, quantitative easing. In fact, for the past, I don't know how many years, over decades at this point, the government's been really good at giving away or printing money. Qualitative tightening is essentially the opposite of that. They're actually pulling out liquidity from the market. So that's what drives the volatility. When you have less liquidity, less buying specifically from the Fed, you have what we would call 2022, which is this dramatic increase of yields as the Fed's hike and continues to increase the Fed's fund rate. And it's pulling money out at the same time and causing the current environment we're in today.
So with that, you know, the current environment we're in today, I mean, the Fed hasn't really, you know, changed the quantitative tightening that they're doing all that much. So why has there been an improvement? Is this just something people are looking out in the future and saying it's going to get better?
Well, if you think about the markets, it's all based on humans, right? Psychology, if you will. To beat the market, you have to get ahead of the market. And so historically, the market prices 6 to 9 months in advance. So when you think about the Fed, which met last week, they talked about, you know, hey, we're going to continue hiking till the terminal rate has been reached. The previous meeting, they established that perhaps they will begin to arrive at what they would say is the terminal rate sooner than originally anticipated. And just that verbiage alone sent the markets into this perception that, okay, we are reaching that terminal level ahead of schedule. The problem is it's an elusive target. So it's all data driven. Yes, we've gotten what appears to be peak inflation, but so the Fed's mantra isn't so much, hey, we're gonna possibly lower the threshold of what we're gonna stop hiking. It's more, we're gonna slow it down as far as the pace itself. So the terminal rate, and I'll actually speak to that here shortly, I believe, through a slide. The terminal rate seems to have come down, and the Fed's saying we'll probably gradually get there, but longer in doing so.
I don't know if anyone else can attest with me, but I'm pretty tired of listening to the Fed in terms of like, you know, it's almost frustrating and you know, a lot of dents in my opinion. And I'm still taking out loans on them. It's not as fun as it was 6 years ago. But I'd like your guys' general perspective. I mean, I think the general consensus is for the layman person, for the average investor, for myself, quite frankly, you look at some of these, just like, okay, this is too much data. So that's why we need professionals like yourself, Andrew, to walk us through this and look. But I mean, we kind of just want to know, like, okay, generally speaking, like, what expect, and how do we apply it to our own investing path and how to use this to think money and how we invest money. So I guess to summarize what you're saying, it sounds like hopefully we've reached somewhere near the top, or maybe have, and we should anticipate potentially see some easing up in interest rates. Is that generally what you would agree?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, it's going to be data dependent. So the Fed's acknowledging things are headed in the right direction. The problem that I see in the future is the Fed also tends to overdo it. So we'll see inflation come down. It already's begun. We've gotten proof in the data. The Fed is all worried about their credibility. So if the markets, which they've already kind of gone ahead of their skis, if you think about it, the market said, you know what, they're done. The writing's on the wall. The Fed's going to stop hiking. And the yields have come down based on that trajectory. So now the Fed's got to stick to their guns so long as the market allows them to, or at least the data, I should say, allows it to. The biggest thing we're watching right now is not only just inflation, but how's the employment environment? How's that circumstance going to play out? Because, you know, we've been talking about recessions and whether or not the market's pricing in a full-blown recession. And so when the recession, when the recession does happen, the Fed's already, you know, their dry powder is being used getting up to the level they've gotten. So once the market rears its, they respond and say, okay, we acknowledge the recession is here. The Fed has no choice but to respond and react. That goes back to the psychology of the Fed. They've got to get as high as they can today in order to have that dry powder to be able to come back down to ease the market.
Now, don't we usually have a lagging effect of some case? You know, whenever they raise the rate, usually there's a lagging effect before it actually kicks in and hits the economy. Is this something that they're raising the rates now and in 12, 18 months, everybody's just going to freak out because the economy changes due to the changing rates?
You remember that term transitory? transitory happened on the way up. It's kind of like we it's Groundhog's Day. We don't think it can happen on the way down. The lag is what kind of started this, you know, the belief that the Fed's done so much so fast that eventually it's going to catch up. It has not played out as much as they put into the market or the rates, the Fed funds rate, where it's at today. The impacts haven't been felt yet. So yes, I would agree. I think the transitory will work on the way down when we say, oh, wow, the economy all of a sudden overnight flipped into we're in a bad place and we're going to be stuck with now the music stopping. And we've already got so much liquidity taken out at that point that that's when the bottom, in my opinion, could potentially just drop out.
Yeah. Now, Graham, I saw a graph the other day just talking about the incredible, you know, the speed at which the Fed funds rate has gone up. Have you seen anything like this? I know you've been around for longer than I have. Have you seen anything like this before?
No, I've been at it for 25 years. And I think even Andrew and I were talking about it. This is probably the fastest I've ever seen the rates go up in such a short period of time. Andrew, you've been at it about the same time. It's just crazy how fast this what's gone up. But my question is, Andrew, in kind of more layman's terms, you know, we all are kind of hoping for or expecting to have the economy hit the recession wall second, third quarter of next year, which we are going to hopefully start seeing some of those rates, you know, come down to a little better level. And I think the average interest rate, I think somebody was quoting the other day, was like around 5%, maybe 5.25%. Is that something you would agree on?
Yeah, I think when you think about, you know, the investors are kind of telling the tape right now, the higher interest rates are already being priced worser than what the lower rates are moving in conjunction. So layman's terms wise, if you're an investor holding mortgage notes, would you want to be holding a 7%, 7.5% interest rate when you see what's kind of going on? And the markets are really telling us that the likelihood is these rates are going to start to drop and no one wants to hold the bag on these higher note rates. So we're seeing a shift back down to lower coupons because that's where the buying potential is going to come in. People are going to buy. They're wanting those loans to stay in their books and service much longer. And so when the dust settles, where you think about what is the equilibrium where the Fed's not involved, they're not buying, you know, that low to mid 5.5 level is kind of where we were. If you think about it before COVID happened and QE kicked in. So naturally you would think once it's all taken out of the market, that would be a really good resting spot that we're kind of eyeing as a probable level that we'd see interest rates.
Now that 5.25, I'm assuming that's for
owner-occupied
because correct. I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah, I need to be a little more specific on that, but yes. And what Andrew was trying to explain and kind of putting it more into layman's terms, we went up so fast and it's got, you know, the guys on Wall Street nervous. They don't want to buy all these notes at a high note rate because, you know, a year from now, you know, all these investors that have acquired these properties with a higher interest rate, they're going to want to come back and refinance it and get their cash flows better. And we've all heard the terminology, you know, marry the property, date the rate. Well, that's really what's going to take place. Guys on Wall Street, they know this. So they're going to experience an early payoff and all the profit they thought they were going to make on these notes, buying them from, you know, Fannie Freddie, keeping them on their books for 3 to 5 years is not going to happen. So consequently, we're not seeing them juice the margins as much as they normally would. And because people always ask me, well, can I get a 0 point pricing or par pricing? Well, not in the last 6 months. And this is why. OK, but I have seen it improve in the last 3 weeks. Andrew, and maybe you can kind of help us understand why it did get a little bit better in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, specifically last 3 weeks, kind of what we were talking about before, there's been a sentiment shift. The belief that the worst is behind us in respects to the Fed slowing down their terminal or the velocity in which they're going to be hiking, but also what level their actual terminal rate's going to end up at. You know, in addition to that, you know, you think about we're coming into to year end and we're about to hit, you know, a new year with, you know, a lot of people are probably coming off the sideline. There's a lot of cash on the sidelines. And I think that what drives our interest rate, it's the treasury market, the more buyers than sellers is what helps, obviously, what pushes rates down. So once the risk is more, you know, established, once we know, hey, you know, things are, whether it's a soft landing, hard landing, what have you, once there's more clarity, it's the uncertainty that's hurting us right now. Once there's more clarity, as we get more towards an end tunnel, you know, the light of the end tunnel turns out not to be an oncoming train, I think then you'll see more buyers into the market, more participants, where pricing does kind of return, and you start getting those premiums again. I think that's what we're starting to see in these past 3 weeks. I think as the year ends and we go into the new year, I think there'll be a return to buying mortgages. And so that's what we're at least hanging our hat on and hopes for.
And that's what you're talking about is the buying of mortgages and bonds, right? You're not talking the buying of real estate when you're talking about buyers and sellers, right?
Specific interest rate driven. Correct.
Let's translate this a little bit to the actual real estate market and how to think about rates. Graham, I mean, and you shared some stats this morning, which I think we should review. If you don't mind, either Adam, you can pull those up or we can just talk about them as far as like inventory and like how to think about the market, because there's still areas in the market that are extremely strong right now. We're not seeing this huge like housing crash. Yes, there is some fluctuation in sectoral and geographic areas that we're seeing a necessary reduction, in my opinion, but there's also areas that are thriving and there's an extreme shortage of housing. And I think those are the areas to invest still. So I want to review those stats, but also Graham, I'd like to hear kind of your opinion on like with all this going on, all this considered on the lending side, working in the lending world, and you're a professional investor as well. I mean, some of your investments are with us, right? But I mean, what are you telling people to do right now? What are you recommending? What are you personally doing considering the rates?
Well, I remind them that we are now in a buyer's market and the inventory is out there. It's better than it was before. The builders are, you know, they've slowed down. Obviously, we know that down in Florida. But the people that are have been doing this for a while, the people who got two or three on their belt, they recognize that we do have some opportunities. So, you know, you've heard the saying in this industry for the last 6 months, you know, buy the property, marry the property, and date the rate. And what we're doing as a company to reinforce that is if they do buy a property today and we do have them at a, you know, a higher rate, this time next year, say the rates come back down significantly, we'll refinance them, put them at a better rate, better cash flow, and I'll waive all of my lender fees. So we are supporting them with that. As far as the, you know, I just had a meeting with another Zoom call, and I'll send you a copy of it, with some appraisers. And we were talking about, you know, how does appraisers catch the market going up and how does it catch it coming down? I was talking with a builder friend down in Florida just yesterday, and he says that, that we haven't started seeing it, you know, come back down. I mean, it's flattened out, but it's still very, very strong in Florida. Now, if you look at other markets, Zach, that's probably not the case. Maybe up in the Midwest, Ohio, maybe Detroit. I really haven't talked to those markets to see if they started coming down, but it's all a 6 month lag. So we don't know when that's going to start coming down and starting to hurt, but the inventory is still out there. Okay. And we are still seeing people buy. Yeah. As Andrew says, we have people still sitting on the sidelines. I think after the first year, they're going to come off the sidelines, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No. I mean, frankly, in all the markets that we work in, we haven't seen any decrease in price.
Yeah.
We haven't seen any fluctuation. In fact, we've still seen strong appreciation, maybe albeit not as much as we have last year, right? But it's still...
That's not coming back.
Yeah.
It's not the deep dive like we saw in LA. It's just not. It's not there.
I think the general sentiment that we're seeing right now is like, okay, cash flow is compressed and people all are sitting on the sidelines because they either don't know what to do, they're not a savvy investor, they're afraid, or they're like waiting for interest rates to come back down. But like, in my opinion, and we bought more real estate personally in 2022 than we have any year previously. And some of those were at higher rates, and we'll continue to do that. A lot of that is a tax play. Okay. So that's the idea behind it, because we still get 100% bonus depreciation in 2022. But I mean, you can refinance at any point in time, right? I mean, and rents go up over time. It's important that you're still taking action, because time actually is the biggest variable here that will determine your success in real estate. And of course, regardless of interest rates, you're paying down the loan, you get the appreciation, tax benefits, cash flow goes up over time. But I mean, has anyone here ever known anyone that's had a loan for 30 years and paid it off the whole time? Is I don't. I mean, I personally don't. So, I mean, this is just something to keep in mind. But let's go over the stats on that you shared with me, just as far as like general housing trends. Can one of you guys pull those up so we can look at them?
Andrew, are you ready for that one?
Yeah.
And so before, as y'all are pulling that up, just a quick question for y'all. Graham, you mentioned that, you know, people are going to be refinancing whenever the rates come back down. Will that impact the general market, the rates at that time? If a ton of people come back and say, you know, I want to refinance because the rates are lower now.
Is the question say, will the Fed start responding to that? Is that what your question?
Will anything in the market respond? Like if suddenly, you know, 50% of the people who've bought this last year come back and say, I want to refinance right now because, you know, the rate's 2 points lower. Will that have any impact on what investors and what other home buyers are seeing? Or is that just kind of off to the side, doesn't have any impact on the market?
I don't think it'll have any impact on the market. It was almost like 20 and 22. I mean, if the rates are there and it improves their cash flow, well, yeah, go ahead and do it. I don't think, Andrew, if that's going to affect how the Feds look at this, if we start, I mean, they start originating a lot of lower notes, or would they be back in buying these mortgage-backed securities like they did back in 2021?
Likely not. I mean, I think their mission is to, at least this Fed seems to want to get out of the mortgage space. that's why there's so much liquidity. In addition, you have players like Japan, China, who used to be almost the top buyers of treasury bonds that are also exiting the mortgage space, the treasury mortgage-backed security market, which has only amplified the volatility and obviously the selling that's been going on.
Yeah, that's one of the more recent impacts that we've seen. So there's multifactorial things that are affecting this, right? Like internationally. And sometimes it's hard to determine. I'm just curious, though, in all of your guys' banking experience, which, you know, Graham, based on the gray hairs on your head, I think you have, you know, maybe 50 plus years in the game. But what's the worst interest rate you guys have seen in your lifetime, in your experience?
In my lifetime, I don't think I ever saw them in the teens. Now, before, I mean, I know I'm a little bit older than Andrew, so I'm sure you never saw them in the teens. But you know, back in the 80s, they were in the teens. I do remember that one product that I used to sell the crap out of when it was probably in the eights, maybe eight and a halves. I think that was like 99, somewhere in that ballpark. And we had that thing called the option arm, which, you know, according to everybody in the world, oh, well, that crushed the industry, the option arm, deferred, it's a negative product, you name it. It was an excellent product for investors. I mean, there's still some investors today that still have those loans on the books. It's incredible. But no, I haven't seen, the highest I've ever seen was probably in the eights in my lifetime.
I used to originate loans back in the day myself. 2010, I think I was originating 7%. That was the highest I got it personally.
Now, once again, these are all owner-occupied, right?
Yeah. Yes. So we're not there yet. we're not there. But, yeah, we've seen worse times. And, you know, there, like as you mentioned, there's still investors that were successful. Who was it? Was it Richard Duncan? Who were we talking to, Adam, who was talking about buying properties in the 80s at like 16 or 17%?
I don't recall who that was.
Yeah, I think it was.
It was there.
But it was interesting, just, you know, his perspective and philosophy. But let's go through some of these graphs and talk about some of these markets stats here.
So this kind of pertains to the inventory, Graham. And if you want to speak to some of this too, let me know. Today we got a existing home sales. It showed a decline in what previously has been a run up. So I'm going to jump around to a few slides just to kind of show you. This is year-to-date inventory levels, and you can see just how high, you know, from the low that was January. You think about this. I'm jumping around slides, but this is kind of the median of inventory, and obviously run up in 2008 when homes sat on the market, and then it shows you kind of from 2016 on we've slowly.
And Andrew, can you actually state numbers for those listening on the podcast that can't see the visual? That way we can,
sure,
get some data too.
Sure. So this is in metrics of the slide. So you're looking at between 2,000 to 3,000 is the metric it plays. That's kind of the median level of what we would say over time our inventory was. And then as you progress from 2016 to today, it basically got chopped in half. The low was about 800. And we are well below the highs. So fast forwarding to today, 800 was in January 2022. We actually have seen an ascent of inventory, which was predicated off of this large climb in interest rates. People started being less active purchasing homes, so homes began to sit longer. And so you have in July of this year a current peak where you got up to 1310. And then since then, we've started to see, you know, again, July's kind of the peak activity of mortgages. So you start to see some of that inventory start to come back down. And then fast forward to today, which was the release in November, we saw another drop about 7.7% month over month in inventory. And so it was worse than what we expected. But overall, we are still up year over year when you go back to the chart that I was just showing, considering what we were, you know, as we started 2022. You know,
so if you had to summarize that for all of that information in just one perspective or one sentence, how would you do that for somebody?
So basically what's going to happen is, or what I believe is happening is, you know, what the current, there's a ton of buyers and sellers weighing what's out there, specifically interest rate driven, in my opinion. And going back to kind of what I was talking about before, it's all about waiting for the right timing. So sitting on the sidelines till they feel they're getting either a better price, sales price wise, or better interest rate. It's like the two are working in tandem against us right now. We not only have a reduction of very low inventory level, which keeps prices a lot higher, but you also have high interest rates, which causes affordability issues. So two things that we're watching are obviously increased inventory, which will probably be predicated by lower interest rates. And with more inventory, home prices should come down in tandem. So that's not happening yet as these numbers are showing us. But I think a lot of it will start with the interest rate move. Obviously, people are not listing their homes when they're in 3% or even investment properties, I suppose, in 5%, what have you, the lower tranches of interest rates. They're not going to list their homes until they feel like they can move or purchase another investment property or another primary residence at a more reasonable level. So inventory is still going to be an issue, I think, into 2023. But the light of the tunnel is if rates come down, people will start to be ready to, you know, use their dry powder.
Yeah, I've been saying for a while, I mean, once investor interest rates get back into the, you know, mid fives or something, I think it was going to be a feast as people come running off the sidelines and see the numbers that they, you know, that they want, that they've been dreaming of for a while. They'll see their cash flow go up. And then, you know, as an investor, suddenly you're competing with people again. And right now you're sitting on a situation where, you know, inventory is taking a little bit longer to churn. So, you know, you can either choose to, you know, go now whenever you could actually pick and choose, or go later whenever you're just going to be grabbing something as it's flying by. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be kind of the world that we're living in at the moment.
And a lot of the commercial assets that I buy, these are, we have these like 20-year to 25-year amortized loans. They're usually like a 5 to 7 year balloon. And it's a fixed rate for that term usually, or it's a blend where it's like a few years fixed and then has variance. And one thing I always think about is like, I have some loans that I've had for, and these are pretty significant in size. And so, you know, a little variance in rate makes a great difference in the payment. I have some loans that are in the threes, and some of the things I'm thinking about right now is just like, man, I, you know, some of those properties that I bought, if the rates, you know, here in a couple of years are just consistently high, and I have to go through and refinance those, or extend those and the rate varies, I mean, I could be in a challenging position, where, you know, they may not cash flow. Or may not meet the DSCR, DTI, or debt yield, you know, requirements for the loans. However, right now, when we're buying some of these larger loans or larger properties, I feel good that the property, I'm underwriting it based on these rates, and that it still cash flows, with the expectation that if it's in the future when I have to redo this loan, because there's really no such thing as a 30-year fixed loan, or very seldom you come across that in the commercial space, but I mean, if I'm underwriting it now and there's higher interest rates, that means in the future, it should still continue to underwrite and I should be safe, at least in my opinion. And so it almost makes like my underwriting criteria a little bit stricter and a little bit safer. And I think that's a good way to look at how to invest right now, instead of saying, oh, I'm not going to invest because I'm waiting for these rates to come down, and then almost forcing something. Like, just adjust your underwriting criteria appropriately. And then I think still make moves, because if something works right now, we know over time, as you're reducing that that debt on that property, and if you need to refinance or something like that, a loan structure will be better. Likely will have lower interest rates in the future, regardless. And also, you know, rents go up over time. So I think that's just a little perspective I wanted to share to the audience as far as like how to look at stuff right now. I would say, don't be reactive to the market and one of these people that is fearful about where the market's going, but be proactive. And this is just investing in general. Like, get used to it. It's always a dynamic process. And so learn how to adapt to the market and still be a savvy investor, because we know that the people that are successful over time are buying in all market conditions, and they're consistently buying year after year. Graham, so, do you agree with me?
I do. That's what Aaron and I have been preaching for all year, basically. What we'll do is we'll say, okay, your rate today is this, but think about it, next year your rate could be this, and we'll show them just dollars and cents. And if people get they get too caught up in percentages. Yeah, their percentages are important, but dollars and cents, as far as I'm concerned, is the most important thing. And a lot of these investors are, they're smart people, but sometimes they're simple minded. And when they see these dollars, they kind of go, oh, okay, that does actually kind of make sense.
Well, they're just hyper-focused. Yeah, they're just hyper-focused on, you know, the rate, because we're all, as Andrew mentioned in the beginning, yeah, you know, we're all used to this historically low interest rates, and, you know, it's all perspective. So I would say shift your mindset from being super focused on that to looking at a broader long-term overview of how to build a successful portfolio and ultimately meet your financial goals. And guess what? At the end of the day, guys, if you got to put 25% down instead of 20%, okay, then do that, right? Or adjust your buying price point to be able to do that. So it's all about just being dynamic. But,
you know, we were, before this year, 20% was we were selling a lot of 20% down loans, okay? And then over the course of the year, when rates went up, made more sense to 25. We really got hardly any pushback for people putting down 25%. And there's every now and then those 20%ers out there, but for the most part, Aaron, I mean, I don't think we've seen hardly any resistance on the 25% down.
Yeah, the bulk of all our clients are tending to put the 25% down. One other thing to keep in mind, you know, the with the volatility of the market lately too, the rate is what it is, but the additional buy downs that we see every single day have really been kind of all over the place. So some borrowers who, you know, the rate might be, say, you know, 6.5 at one point that day, where usually maybe a point and a half, 2 points might only get you from 6.5 to 6.25. In some cases, we're getting them, you know, 0.5%, if not more. So we're walking through, you know, with all our borrowers, you know, each scenario, and it's, you know, it's varies day to day, but going back to Graham's point is we get down to the dollars and cents, get less focused on the actual rate percent itself. And, you know, a lot comes to light all of a sudden whenever we do that. So,
yeah, let's go into, you know, you talk about pain points. Obviously, this is something that's become much more common in today's environment. I don't know which one of you three wants to take it, but to y'all, what makes the most sense in terms, like, kind of what's your break even point? Like, whenever you look at, you know, you have to get it paid off in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. What's your general recommendation for that as people? If someone's using, you know, a local lender and not somebody who's smart at this, what should they be looking at?
I have two schools of thought on that one. I mean, if we think we're going to, well, we know that the rates are going to come back down next year, a lot of the providers are out there saying, okay, we'll do a 2-point buy down. Okay. And that's fine. That gets you the nice rate. They feel warm and fuzzy because they bought it down. But a lot of times, we're doing a package of, you know, you're involved with the guys down in Florida. He chose to take it off the price versus the buy down because he took his rate and he's going to come back again next year. But what typically on the buy downs as an average before the beginning of the year, 1 point buy down would only get you a 0.25 reduction in rate. That math is like 5.11 years. What Aaron was trying to say is that the yield spreads are much more spread out, where, like, if the, let's just say we did have a 0 point price today at 6.5, but all of a sudden at right at 6, which is a full 0.5 point difference, it only takes 1 point to get there. Well, then now we're down to a, you know, 21, 22 month return. So it and those things vary from one day to the next. And even a 2 point buy down, you could buy even further. So a lot of times the 2 point buy downs will get you down and dirty if that's the route you want to go. And just, and as Aaron say, we just relate it into dollars and cents.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought process thing, because it's a balancing act, I think, because yes, we get a higher, you know, yield on and return on our investment based on points, paying points, than we traditionally would. So it almost encourages people to do that. However, again, if your plan is to refi in 1 to 2 years, it's like, you know, and then you have additional loan costs to look at by going through the refi. But it almost seems like you're paying some level of points, even at like zero, right? I mean, just a par rate. I mean, it's like some sort of points are expected. And that's, I think Andrew was touching on this previously, just based on, you know, investors in the, you know, Wall Street is seeing that as a risk, because they know that they're anticipating people will refi. So they need to account for that, hedge that risk somehow. But I mean, it's an interesting thing. Aaron, What would you say is the most common in this type of environment? Because there's a lot of things going on that are potentially causing concern for people. It's not just the rates, right? It's not just a little uncertainty. But I mean, what are some of the most common fear points or pushback you see from investors in terms of like, you know, taking a loan out on a property, investing in real estate in general? It'd be good to hear kind of from the lender perspective what the feedback is.
Yeah, and I can kind of speak to, you know, what we see as our buyers go through the purchasing process as we get them pre-approved, you know, as they're kind of shopping properties. And, you know, rate is of course, the number one thing that people are concerned with by now. And as I'm sure a lot of, you know, we've kind of established that point by now in this call that, you know, sitting on the sidelines really isn't going to do you much good for the variety of reasons we've already discussed. So after we get past rate, the next thing that comes into question, a lot of people are kind of curious about appraisals and what are we seeing there? And they're worried about, you know, they see headlines in the news of markets dropping and this and that, and am I buying overpriced property? And we really, you know, as we've, you know, kind of touched on as well, we've seen a flattening in a lot of areas, if anything, but things are still growing slightly. We're still seeing home prices go up, just as not as significantly in the past. So appraisals really haven't been an issue, you know, across the front. And then, you know, as we work with borrowers to build their portfolio, you know, there's always going to be the question of, you know, should I do 20 or 25% down, the rate difference there? The 25 will always get them a better rate. So it's going to be unique to each borrower. If, you know, if they're trying to get up to their 10 Fannie Mae slots as quickly as possible, then maybe putting 20% down, saving that 5% in their back pocket for the next property is the way to go. So each borrower is kind of their own. I will say, you know, across the board, we've seen borrowers, you know, be hesitant as they scope out deals and check in with rates now more than ever, you know, and the thing to understand is until we kind of hit that wall that we alluded to earlier, you know, the more we kind of sit and wait, you're losing out on that time, you know, rates are kind of continuing to creep up. So a lot of hesitancy overall. But we do our best, you know, to kind of reassure them with all the aspects. Home inventory, the prices are still strong. You know, the refi product that we have, waiving their lender fees if they come back when these things do inevitably turn around. So we kind of give all the best numbers and products we can to help them feel better. But, you know, it's rates and just the hesitancy over that that we're seeing more than anything.
You know, one of the things that I would share about the percentage of down pay is that, let's just say from here on out, the appreciation stopped, but we're not depreciating. Let's say we're going to be flat for the next 16, 18 months. Okay. All of a sudden rates come back down again. All right. Well, it's time to refinance. Well, you can buy a property at 20% down, but you can only refinance it at a 75% LTV. So keep that in mind. So if you're thinking about doing that, you might want to consider that 25% down.
Yeah. What's kind of, Andrew, whenever, you know, rates do come down, if we see some quick appreciation, let's say that, you know, owner occupied rates come down to 4% and people jump in and start buying again, how quickly do you think the Fed's going to say, you know what, cut it out and just jack them back up?
Well, I think that's going to be predicated off of whether or not they have the ability to. If we go to 4%, I mean, I think from a primary basis, at least the current is, we're still in the sixes, mid sixes at that. So a shift of that nature would be likely driven by an economic driving force.
Can you explain that? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So if you think about it, the Fed's raising rates to slow the economy. And they're doing so at such a high rate, as we were talking earlier, it hasn't really caught up yet. So if we go to 4% as far as the primary rate, it's probably because the economy has slowed to the degree that we're full blown recession now. And the Fed at that point can't hike rates. It would cause an economic collapse if they did so. So to answer your question, the market is driven off of what the perception of the economy is, i.e. the Fed's impact to that. And I do believe they would have their hands cuffed at that point if it got to that point.
So you're saying there's only one way for the rates to go?
Essentially, again, if we achieve a soft landing, I'll put this out there. If we achieve a soft landing and the Fed accomplishes exactly what they set out to do, and everything is roses and gumdrops and all the sugar candies falling from the sky, then there's a likelihood that we could be in a higher interest rate level for a much longer period of time, because it's the Goldilocks environment that the Fed is hoping to achieve. But we know that that needle is so small, and to thread it has never really been done in the history of the economy. So the odds are stacked against them. It's just how hard a landing will we get? And that'll be the pace at which rates will fall.
So a few key takeaways just from the last previous comments. Andrew's telling us rates are coming down. Graham's buying a bunch of property. Aaron's saying this is a good time to actually get better benefits from lenders right now in terms of, you know, when that refi does come around. What else did I miss? Graham, what are you buying? What does 2023 look like for you?
Well, I've got all those new builds coming off the ground down in Florida, so that's what I'm just sitting back and watching. I've got three are coming off the ground, and I got another seven, you know, trying to get through the permitting and get off the ground. But thank gosh, when the three that were coming off the ground, when Ian came through, it was just a pad. So right now we're getting foundation, and that's starting to come up. So
well, you had some that were completed. I mean, the hurricane probably had minimal impact, right? I don't think we've seen anyone that's been dramatically impacted.
I had a couple of houses that lost some shingles, the hurricane windows, you know, those metal things that go around the windows, and maybe a gutter or two, but nothing to make a claim, maybe, you know, $2,000 at best. Yeah. So, and that was right in the Cape. So that got hit pretty hard.
Sure.
It's one of those things. If your home did fine during that, your home's going to be fine.
Exactly. will the insurance rates go up because of that? Yeah, I think so. Probably. I've already started to feel that. It's so weird about the interest rates down in Florida, or the insurance rates. When you buy new, it's here. The next year it's here. You know, it's almost like buying in California. You know, when you move to California and you have to pay, if you got a brand new car, you have to pay $300. If you got a 10-year-old car, you only have to pay $5.
Graham, how dare you make that analogy?
So Florida is California, is what I just heard Graham say.
No, there
it's
could be
just
anarchy
crazy
here.
Down there. It really is. And I love it. Don't get me wrong, but it's crazy down there.
All right. Well, one final question I have for y'all is, I know initially as rates were starting to go up, y'all came out with the program that was, you know, locking your rate for, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, up to, I think, 360 days. I'm assuming that in today's environment, that's not something that many people are taking advantage of, or is that something that people are still taking advantage of?
It's slowed down quite a bit. I think we were doing most of that locking in the probably second, maybe third quarter, but yeah, it slowed down since this, because we've already, you know, gone up. Andrew, maybe you can share a little bit. You have a chart that sees those?
It definitely has slowed. So something to keep in mind, though. I think the sentiment is, okay, why would I lock in a 1 year rate if rates are headed down? One thing we can communicate from that program is it has a built-in float down feature. So if you want the protection in case this thing does turn back and go higher, you can lock in a long-term rate. And then if the market does turn out to drop, we can float you down to whatever the threshold is at that point of time when you're getting ready to close. So it's kind of a win-win. So it's still a good product, but there is some, you know, upfront percentages and required, you know, it's not for everybody.
It's an insurance policy. It establishes a ceiling, but you don't have a floor, which is a good thing.
So something to look at and see if it makes sense or not, I guess. Just right. Something to be aware of as you know, in this type of environment. Are we ever going to see the 30-year fixed loan go away? We've seen this in other countries, and to right now, as far as I'm concerned or aware, there's no because we do invest in other countries as well, and my wife's from Canada, but there's no such thing as a 30-year fixed loan there.
I haven't heard of that. I'd say that's our bread and butter, so that would be a problem for all of us, I think.
Well, it just change. I mean, it would just change in terms of, like, you know, the how things are done. I mean, they still haven't amortized over 30 years, but then it's, you know, it's a balloon, or, you know, it's an arm at that point. So
I think you're going the wrong way. Zach.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, they came out with the 100-year treasury. So who knows? We might be at 40 or 50-year conventional loans at some point.
Hey, that would be interesting to see.
Is that China that has the legacy loans or lineage loans?
Oh, I'm not familiar with those. Oh, that's interesting. Well, guys, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for giving us detailed information and update. I mean, obviously, this is something that's at top of mind with a lot of people. Maybe they're tired of hearing about interest rates right now, but I think it's just a mind shift change. I would say no one has a crystal ball, but I would say actually just, you know, don't overthink it. Tighten your evaluation and criteria in terms of underwriting deals. There's still plenty of deals to be had. And if anything, now's a better time to negotiate a little bit, to look at acquiring deals that you didn't have access to maybe 6 months ago. Even though we had interest rates that were super low over the past few years, it was an extreme seller's market. And so it was a very difficult time to get any sort of deal. You know, and so I would be very conscious about the fact that now you have some buying opportunity. And it's a perfect time, it's a perfect strategy to ultimately get something under contract, acquire property, even a higher rate, and then go back and refinance it. And you know, you came in and you bought it right during times like this. So I think that's a great way to approach it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen, you know, we're seeing the seller incentives, you know, but I don't know if I've heard in the time that I've been in, you know, lenders being like, you know what, we'll waive our origination fee in a year or so if you want to refinance. So completely agree, Zach. Well, Graham and team, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with Graham, if you're looking for a loan for your property, go to rentorretirement.com, schedule a call with us. We will give you their information. They're one of our top preferred lenders in the network because, I mean, we've done lots of deals with them and they've been fantastic in every single one. So really appreciate y'all coming by. Again, rentorretirement.com, see the properties that you're going to talk to the Highlands team about getting a loan for. Don't forget to leave us a podcast review on whatever platform you use. And if you have any questions, email them to podcast@renttoretirement.com. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com. And we'll talk to you on the next episode.